to the next case, VHC Incorporated versus the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, Appeal 183717 and 183718. We'll hear first from Mr. Romashko.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Romashko, and I represent the appellant, VHC, in this case. Your Honors, although we've made multiple arguments on brief, really there's only...
Hello? Mr. Romashko?
Yes, I apologize, Your Honor. My cheek apparently bumped the mute button on the phone. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Romashko. I represent the appellant, VHC. This appeal involves only one issue, Your Honor, although there are multiple arguments that issue affect. That issue is when reaching its conclusions of law and finding against VHC in both of its main arguments, the tax court relied heavily on certain findings of fact that are simply not supported by any evidence in the record, or where it ignored material and significant evidence on these points. The tax court's disregard for the record is clear error that must be reversed by this court. Now, this issue infects the tax court conclusions as to both of VHC's main arguments on appeal. First, that ordinary that advances to or for the benefit of Ron VandenHeuvel and his companies were ordinary and necessary business expenses of VHC under Lorke v. Commissioner. And second, whether those advances could otherwise, in the alternative, be considered bona fide debt that could be deductible as bad debts. In both cases, the tax court specifically stated that there was no evidence presented on certain issues, and it was just 100% wrong. The record contains that evidence. In other instances, the tax court fails to address significant record evidence in favor of VHC. This evidence was presented, some of it stipulated, and the evidence is not directly controverted. For reasons that are inexplicable, the tax court, in its opinion, failed to consider this evidence. Had it done so, it would have come to the opposite conclusions on these issues than it did. Now, these are issues of fairness and accountability in the judicial process. Courts need to reach conclusions supported by the records before them, and their opinions ought to reflect those records and those conclusions. The tax court didn't do that here. Turning first to the Lorke argument, the tax court committed clear error in affirmatively concluding that evidence that was presented was not, and in reaching conclusions on the intent or benefit portion of the test that were unsupported and contradictory to the record. Now, in summary, this issue relates to payments that were made for the benefit of Ron VandenHeuvel and his companies pursuant to a September 2002 guarantee that VHC executed with Associated Bank.
Mr. Romashko, are you there?
I apologize. My phone cut out there, Your Honor. I was just turning to the Lorke test, Your Honor.
The tax court, the Lorke issue is related to a 2002 guarantee with Associated Bank. The VHC signed this guarantee in September of 2002, and by doing so agreed to guarantee and cross-collateralize debt obligations of Ron VandenHeuvel and his companies with its own. Now, the IRS presented very little evidence on this issue. The IRS produced one witness during its case in chief. The tax court's conclusions are based on the IRS's argument and speculation, not the evidence in the record. Now, Lorke v. Commissioner says that a party who pays a third party's expenses, though under no obligation to pay, may deduct those payments if the primary purpose was an ordinary and necessary business expense of the payor. Factual determinations of the tax court are reviewed for clear error, and while this is a high bar, it's not an insurmountable one. This court overturned factual determinations of lower courts in, for example, McMath and Duarte, which were cited in our briefs. Now, what were these clearly erroneous determinations? First, the tax court said that payments weren't substantiated. The tax court was wrong in that regard. The tax court stated that VHC failed to support its internal books and records because, and it says this at page 72 of its opinion, the tax court did not introduce evidence of receipts, bank statements, contracts for services rendered, or documents establishing funds paid on guarantees. Now, that's 100% wrong. There are several examples we cited on brief, but briefly, the biggest of these is an $8.3 million purchase agreement where VHC agreed to assume $8.3 million of Ron VandenHeuvel's debts at Associated Bank. This was Exhibit 560J below, and it cited a SA 207 in the record on appeal.
Mr. Omashko, this is Judge St. Eve. Where in the record is there any evidence that VHC actually paid that amount?
Your Honor,
the document you're citing is the loan purchase, but where is there any evidence of actual payment? Because I think you would have to agree there'd have to be an actual payment of it for it to qualify for this exception.
Your Honor, I would agree that there has to be an actual payment. And with respect to that specific document, I would point the court to two places. First, I will agree that there's no specific check with respect to this agreement in the record.
And nobody testified that it was actually paid.
Your Honor, I believe that there are two places you can look to in the record, though, that show the payment. First would be this contract itself corroborates VHC's records. But second, and more importantly, I think, is Associated Bank's internal records on the workout of VHC and Ron VandenHeuvel's loans indicate and reflect that VHC assumed this $8.3 million. So that should substantiate that the transaction actually took place, Your Honor.
Was that brought to the tax court's attention?
Both of those documents were cited with respect to findings of fact, yes, Your Honor. In addition, there are other transactions that certainly have checks attached to them. There, on brief, we cited a $125,000 advance that was presented to the tax court as part of Exhibit 1107P and was also the subject of findings of fact. There are also a series of $69,000 payments to Bay Lake Bank that were subjects of proposed findings of fact below and were Exhibits 554, 1107, and 1108 before. And that's not only the Bay Lake guarantee documents that are cited with respect to those, but also the individual payments and check details. So in light of the above, the finding that there is no evidence of these transactions can't be affirmed. It's just not supported. There is evidence of these transactions, and the tax court should have weighed the evidence, but did not. Turning then to the ordinary and necessary prong, the tax court concluded that even if VHC did substantiate some of the advances, it did not establish that expenses were ordinary and necessary. It concludes this at page 73 of its opinion. And the tax court has two related grounds to make this conclusion. It says that the advances and guarantees were harmful to VHC rather than helpful, and they were entered into to help Ron VandenHeuvel rather than to protect VHC's own business. But the substantial testimony and evidence on these points contradicts that finding. And again, all this testimony was provided by VHC, not the IRS. The IRS did not provide any directly contradictory testimony to VHC's evidence.
But it's VHC's burden of proof. You would agree with that. The IRS doesn't have to put on evidence disproving it.
Unquestionably, Your Honor. So it's not a matter of disproof. But
there
is
what the tax court found. The tax court found that you had not met your burden based on the evidence that you put in at the trial.
Correct. However, the tax court's opinion doesn't address significant record evidence, as I will get to now. So in the Lorke context, and it should be clear, there's always going to be a benefit to a third party. That's you're paying a third party's expenses. Ultimately, Ron VandenHeuvel, in this case, receives the benefit of $60 million in payments, but these were pursuant to a guarantee that VHC signed. They're contingent obligations. They're not, when VHC signs the guarantee, it doesn't know that it will make any payments or how much they will be. The testimony is that VHC did not expect to make anywhere near $60 million in payments. And I don't think there's any contradiction to that in the record. Now, Associated Bank and Ron VandenHeuvel knew differently because Associated Bank knew that Ron had depleted their collateral positions and that he had no source of repayment. That's why they constructed this. This is why they attempted to leverage VHC to make payments on Ron's behalf. The And Ron knew differently. He's in prison now for defrauding investors and creditors. So VHC, on the other hand, didn't know that. They understood that Ron was trying to divest from his businesses. They also understood that they had very limited options. The record reflects that Associated crafted a strategy to try and incentivize VHC to take over payments of these debts or to make the guarantee in favor of Ron. They did this by leveraging VHC's line of credit. There was testimony in the record from Tim VandenHeuvel, the vice president of VHC, one of VHC's subsidiaries, that VHC would have gone bankrupt had it not had lines of credit because it wouldn't have been able to make payroll. It's a contractor and it gets paid in arrears. The evidence shows that VHC tried to move its debt to other banks, but couldn't. And so it had no choice but to sign this or to go out of business. In that context, it was in VHC's best interest. And it was a net benefit to VHC to sign this. And yeah, that's borne out by the fact that VHC ultimately stayed in business. It ends up putting out far more money than it could have imagined under this guarantee agreement. But it works out for VHC. They survive. And that's really the benefit to VHC and the motive VHC had for entering into these transactions. Now, the tax court doesn't address any of that beyond saying that the VHC was concerned about its lines of credit, but it goes far beyond that. And the Third Circuit and Embassy the commissioner offered a reasonable standard here, which is that where the trial tribunal's factual findings and inferences are final unless shown to be clearly erroneous, the trial court needs to affirmatively disclose what disposition it made of so important a factor as the taxpayer's testimony of profit motive. The tax court doesn't do that. The tax court ignores that testimony and evidence other than dismissing it as concern and doesn't address what's actually in the record. That's not sufficient evidence to affirm the tax court's findings. Further, one other brief point on this issue. The tax court also suggested that the presence of prior guarantees establishes that there is some pattern or that this means the guarantee was for Ron's benefit, not for VHC's. But this guarantee, the September 2002 one, the record reflects that it's significantly broader. It cross-collateralizes and has cross-default provisions between all of Ron VandenHeuvel's loans and all of VHC's loans. And the documents were in the record. They were stipulated and they weren't disputed. And they're materially different, and the tax court, although these material differences were brought to its attention, did not address that in the opinion. Briefly, I'd also like to address the ordinary nature of these expenses. The IRS on its brief suggests that these expenses were not commonplace in the industry. It references the paper industry, although VHC is a construction contractor. But the issue is really the ordinary test, and there are multiple lines of cases on this, is not primarily meant to deal with whether an expense is commonplace in the industry. The purpose of that is to distinguish between ordinary and immediately deductible expenses and capital expenses. But even if you are looking at the question of whether the expense is commonplace in the industry, necessarily, if you draw any contract narrowly enough, you're going to say, yeah, this is unique to this particular circumstance. Here, these are expenses for payment, expenses to protect access to credit. And there are a number of cases we've cited that deal with that in the Lorkey context. That's not by itself a reason to declare the expense not ordinary.
How do you get around the definition? How do you get around the definition of ordinary in Section 162A that says the transaction which gives rise to it must be of common or frequent occurrence in the type of business involved?
And again, it's a question of how you characterize the transaction. It's not if any transaction, if you characterize it narrowly enough, Your Honor, you could find it to be unique, right? It's a transaction between these two parties with unique terms that you don't see anywhere else, right? Anything that's not a form transaction would fall into that. Here you've got transactions that are simply for the benefit of, for the purpose of preserving access to credit. There's no dispute, I think, that most companies, including construction contractors, need access to credit. The record also had testimony in it regarding that VHC had occasionally guaranteed debt obligations of other companies it did business with. This isn't a wholly uncommon thing in its own right. Now, so again, unless you're looking very specifically at the narrow terms of this transaction and saying, well, it's unique because, you know, it has this term, this is still a commonplace occurrence, entering into guarantees and preserving one's access to credit.
Mr. Romasco, your time has expired. You had reserved a minute for rebuttal, and I'll allow that. So
Your Honor.
We'll turn now to Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I represent the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. My friend on the other side the first thing he talked about was substantiation and their position that the court ignored evidence of substantiation. We disagree with that. We've said it in our brief, but the court doesn't even need to reach the issue of substantiation, because even if VHC had substantiated all of the amounts that they claim, that wouldn't overcome the tax court's findings that the purported business expenses were not ordinary and necessary, and that the purported debt was not bona fide. With respect to ordinary and necessary business expenses, the Lorkey standard requires a taxpayer who has paid someone else's expenses has to show that it was necessary to protect the taxpayer's own business, and that any benefit to the person whose expenses were paid is only incidental. On that point, the tax court did not ignore any evidence. The tax court acknowledged that the 2002 Associated Bank guarantee came with strings attached, and that VHC was concerned about maintaining its lines of credit to stay in business. What VHC is asking this court to do, however, is to reweigh the evidence. The tax court found that the evidence about concern of line of credit was outweighed by the evidence that VHC's motive was more about helping Ron. And that finding, it has ample support in the record. The tax court specifically found that many of VHC's guarantees actually harmed VHC's business. It didn't protect it, but it harmed it. They also found that VHC had a history of entering into substantial guarantees of Ron's debts before 2002, when there's no claim that it was forced to make a guarantee. It hasn't provided any cogent explanation of how the guarantees subsequent to 2002, which it also claims resulted in deductible business expenses. They haven't offered any explanation of how those guarantees were necessary to protect its business. And so, on top of that, the court made findings about the close family ties between VHC and Ron, and it's well settled that intra-family transfers are rigidly scrutinized for tax purposes. The court also made findings about Ron's status as VHC's largest shareholder, and that the interests of many of VHC's shareholders, including Ron's brother, VHC's president, and Ron's father, VHC's founder, the interest they had as shareholders in Ron's businesses. So there's plenty of basis in the record to support the court's finding that the VHC didn't carry its burden to prove that the entering these guarantees was necessary to protect its business. The IRS's disallowance of deduction is entitled to a presumption of correctness. And the tax court's finding VHC didn't overcome that presumption is not clearly erroneous. Is there some evidence supporting their position? Sure, there is. But this court's function isn't to reweigh that evidence. The trial court, whose job that is, weighed it and found the evidence wanting. So, turning back to whether the tax court considered all the evidence, the tax court, there's no reason to believe from the opinion that the tax court ignored any evidence that VHC brought to its attention. They've cited their three examples in their brief, but as was pointed out earlier, one of those examples involves a contract that they don't cite any evidence that they ever actually paid the amount stated in the contract. And then you've got some 3 pages out of 12,000 pages of exhibits that show a few payments related to the Bay Lake bank guarantee. But there was nothing in 650 pages of VHC's post-trial briefing that would have alerted the tax court that that evidence was in the record and that it showed payments on Bay Lake bank guarantees. So there's no clear error here, and that's the standard of review that is before the court. I think our positions are clearly stated in our brief. I realize I have some more time, and I'd be happy to answer questions. But if not, we'll rest on our brief as to the other issues.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Carpenter. Mr. Romashko, you have a minute.
Yes, Your Honor. Two brief points on rebuttal. First, Your Honors, the government indicated that the tax court acknowledged that VHC was concerned about its lines of credit, and the government said to stay in business. The important thing to note is the tax court did not say that. The tax court's opinion ignores that this was an issue of staying in business or not. And to properly weigh whether any benefit to Ron was incidental compared to the benefit to VHC, you need to understand that VHC, this was an issue of staying in business, and that is not addressed in the tax court opinion. Further, the government counsel indicated that nothing would have alerted the tax court to the examples cited on brief. That is not the case, Your Honors. All of these were cited as the subjects of findings of fact, and I don't see any clearer way you could bring it to a court's attention than that. So for these reasons, we would ask the court to remand the case to the tax court for further proceedings.
Thank you, Mr. Romashko, and thank you, Mr. Carpenter. The case is taken under advisement.